Welcome back into the CC podcast, everybody. It is Friday, January 26th. This is a very, very special episode of the CC podcast. I'm very excited about it. This is actually going to be our NFC Championship game spectacular. It's a solid hour of nothing but Lions 49ers talk. We'll be previewing it. We'll be getting excited from a Detroit perspective, talking about the likelihood or unlikelihood of the Lions making their first Super Bowl. I know Dan Sinard is very excited about this. Dan, welcome into the NFC Championship Game Spectacular episode, buddy.
Here's the deal about this, okay? Like, I really am. I'm excited for you because you've never had this feeling before. I've got to experience this feeling since I've been alive four times, and shocker, they've been four of the worst days of my life. So yeah, if things go well, like, it's going to be tough for me to swallow. No doubt. If Debo doesn't play, this might be the easiest path to a Super Bowl that I've ever seen, but I'm going to ignore that. What sucks about this is, like, when I get on social media, it's like the anniversary of all these NFC championship games. So it's like just constant, like, Brett Favre throwing across his body, Gary Anderson missing field goals. So I really hope for your mental health, because I had Louisville basketball to fall on most of those years. You don't have that to fall back on right now. So I hope for your mental health that things go well.
I mean, what a just – your coping mechanisms are off the chart right now.
If the Lions make the Super Bowl, like, I'm going to be in a little bit of a dark place. I'm not going to lie.
Do you remember what you did for all four of the Vikings conference championship games?
100%. I remember where I was for all of them. I was only 12 when the 15-1 Vikings lost because Gary Anderson had missed in 2 years and then missed a field goal to seal it. And then the Falcons
went
overtime. Here's
the kick. Wide right.
Giants, Vikings. We were favored at the Meadowlands. We were down, I think, 31-0 at halftime. Let's see. And then am I 3 NFC championships? Oh, no, there's 4. And then obviously the Brett Favre against the Saints, throwing it back across his body. When we were in field goal range, that was the worst one for me, I think.
And what'd you do? What was your reaction? I wasn't with you for that.
Were you not with me? I think it was my brother and our friend
I was in
Mark.
The car. Okay. I don't remember where we were going. I remember listening to it on the radio.
I mean, like, it wasn't just me that was, like, shocked and stunned. Like, everyone I was, like, the two guys I was with, like, it was, like, just a hushed silence. Everyone was in, like, the, you know, reverse cobra position. Like, oh, my God, did that just happen? And the worst part about that, we, like, dominated the whole game and had, like, 4 turnovers. But, and then the Eagles game, when we had Case Keenum, like, you know, I was like, all right, we get Nick Foles to go to the Super Bowl. Like, this is our year. We go up 7-0. Things are going great. And then I think we lost, like, 38-7. So, yeah. I don't know. It's been 4 tough years of sledding with those games. But if the Lions make the Super Bowl for the Vikings, I've never even pictured this. I don't even know what I'll do.
By the way, I don't think it's reverse cobra.
Yeah, I believe
you're confusing that with a sexual position. I believe it's the
reverse
surrender cobra.
Reverse, no.
I believe it's the surrender cobra. I mean, it's reverse cobra.
The old reverse cobra.
What can you tell me about things that you did on, like, your preparation for the conference championship game so that I can do the opposite on Sunday?
I mean, the one that sticks out, when we played the Giants, I think this was like, God, what year was this? Maybe 99 or 2000, the Kerry Collins year. Like, I remember, like, I had to go to church with my parents, and, like, by the time I got home, we were down 7-0, and there'd been, like, 10 seconds in the game. I was like, this was a mistake! So, it's like, I mean, not saying anything bad about God here, but maybe don't go to church and miss the first part of the game. But, yeah, it's like, you guys, I forget, is Lions late game or early game?
We're the late game.
Oh, man, that's excruciating, because, like, you can't really enjoy the first one, even though it's kind of cool, you know who you're gonna play. It's a long wait, no doubt.
You need to post the video of the your reaction of the chip shot miss in the playoffs a few years ago.
Oh, the Blair Walsh. Yeah, that's not even an NFC title game. That was just the worst.
I believe your wife was taking a video of you. And I mean, it's like it's a legit collapse. It's very much a video that could have gone viral if it had been posted like 3 years later publicly.
Yeah, I mean, that was that one hurt almost as worse as all of them, because that was Teddy was quarterback team. I don't think it was a Super Bowl team, but I felt bad for Ted.
I'm in this strange so like I'll be perfectly honest. Well, first of all, do you want your moon update for the week?
Jesus, oh God, I can't do this anymore.
Waning gibbous moon this weekend. Lions are 2-0 this season, playing underneath a waning gibbous. Feeling pretty good about that. Love that.
I feel like wine, is this Weinberg like making up moon names? Like, these aren't even words, whatever you're speaking, but anyways,
it's 100% science. This is astrology. It's by the book. It's been around for millions of years. I thought the Rams game was like a 50-50 game. I was very nervous going into that game. I thought we would beat the Bucks last week. I've got a feeling like San Francisco just gets right in this game, that they had their kind of like close call last week against the Packers. They should have lost that game. And everyone's kind of doubting their, like, can they really win the Super Bowl? Could they beat whoever comes out of the AFC? And I've got a bad feeling they might just wax us in this game, because Jared Goff does not handle pressure well. And our offensive line's a little dinged up after last week. I don't know. I have a bad feeling about this game. On paper, it seems like we have a shot. Like you said, Debo's hurt and, you know, the Niners aren't invincible by any stretch of the imagination. We're playing pretty well, but I've got kind of a bad feeling. Having said that, like, I am as good as this football season has been for me, like, Louisville goes out there, wins 10 games. I know it ended poorly, but they had a dream season for a large chunk of it. I won our fantasy league, which was awesome. You came in last. That also was awesome. You don't get to play next year. That's hilarious. And then now you've got Lamar in the AFC championship game, and then Teddy and the Lions in the NFC championship game. Like, my mind can't even wrap itself around the idea of the Lions playing in the Super Bowl. And here we are, like, one win away from that happening. And if the Lions don't make it, it would seem like there's a very good chance that, like, my favorite Louisville player of all time, or one of my favorite Louisville players of all time, Lamar Jackson, will play in the Super Bowl. So I should have a rooting interest. There's a disaster scenario out there that's very plausible, where the Chiefs win and the Lions lose, and I'm sitting here, like, just so salty as fuck for the Super Bowl this year, and I'm very concerned about that happening.
Yeah, I mean, it can definitely happen. That Chiefs Ravens game, I can't even imagine the rating that's going to get. My God,
I know.
That is just going to be a home run. I don't know if CBS has that game or who, but yeah. I mean, I know you're picturing worst case scenario in your head, but it's like, I do not feel bad for you at all. Like, you just, yeah, it's like, I'm out of the fantasy league. My team sucks. It's like, everyone's coming around. What not, Doug?
If the Ravens win on Saturday, will you finally stop telling everybody that Lamar Jackson is a running back who throws like Uncle Rico? I believe that's your words.
Oh, but my God.
That's what you say.
I literally can't do this. I made one comment how I need to see it in the playoffs like 3 years ago. I've been nothing but complimentary, and you and the rest of my friends have just taken this statement and run with it. To the point, like, I mean, obviously I'm pulling for Lamar. Like, this is kind of a joke. But, like, if he doesn't win, and now we got Harbaugh with Justin Herbert, it's like, then the rivalry is really back on.
You mean, all you do is talk about how you're not sure he can read defenses well enough, and he just doesn't, like, see the field. He's not ball security. I don't know what you're trying to say when you make these comments, but you just keep doing it. And it's just, it's, I don't know. It's, you've really put yourself on an island here. You don't like Lamar Jackson. It's a weird thing for a Louisville fan to do. I don't know.
I'm not going to let my son listen to this.
Let's talk. Well, I would love to keep doing this for like 45 more minutes, but I'm not going to. Let's talk a little Cardinal basketball. Let's turn the page from the only good thing in my sports life to the thing that has preoccupied my sports life for far too much. Far too often for the last couple of years, which is Louisville men's basketball losing basketball games. It's late in the week now. We're almost a week past the Zan Payne starting hysteria. I think that was the official title of what everyone was going through. I mean, the Zan Payne dominated my radio show on Monday. And to the point where I had to go on like kind of a rant. I don't rant, but it was like a little, I got upset in the second hour. I was like, we should not be talking about Zan Payne. This is Kenny's fault. He put him in this position. I hate like having to talk about why this kid is getting 17 minutes, but it's his dad's fault. Like there's no reason to start him. There's no reason to play him in the second half in a game that we lost by 25 points on the road. But that ended. He gave us a normal starting lineup against Duke, put Curtis Williams in there. Trey White's back in the starting lineup now. No more Danilo, no more Hersey, no more Zan. Zan did play like a short spurt and played well. Almost made a three, dove on the floor for a steal. I think that was all anybody wanted to see. But the two games that have transpired since the last time we talked, a 25-point road loss to Wake Forest and a 14-point home loss to Duke. Every game kind of feels the same at this point. Hey, they're trying. Hey, they're doing some good things on offense. But my God, they can't defend anybody. And as a result, Louisville sits at 1-7, back alone in last place in the ACC. Dan, quick basketball thoughts on what we've seen over the last two games here.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, we were just casual fans of like a mediocre program, I might be like, hey, you know, like from an effort standpoint, like, hey, we're showing a little bit of progress. Like, hey, offensively, like, you know, even though we're scoring in kind of one-on-one situations, like we seem to have some guys that can get the ball in the bucket, but just, you know, we have much higher standards, efforts expected. The defense is still very, 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 very much left to be desired. I mean, the beginning of the Duke game, my God, it was like a dunk contest or a layup line. And, you know, we made a run. I think we got it within, like, five or something. But I think everyone knows, like, you know. And I feel bad for the kids. We just don't have – we don't have the horses. You know, if we're going to be a team that doesn't play defense and try to match shot for shot, I mean, we don't have nearly enough talent or depth to, you know, try to do that, especially with a team like Duke, who, in my mind, did not play nearly – to their full capabilities. I mean, the Wake Forest game, my God. I mean, it was like a three-point shooting contest. I was like, there's no way. Like, how in the world are guys still this open? But, you know, I guess, what is it? Season starts Saturday. We got some teams coming up that you think, hey, maybe we have a shot. But it's still pretty dark right now.
If I ask you to project... We're 1-7 right now in the ACC. We have 12 games left. And like you said, February, like, you're playing – this is a shitty ACC. There's no way around it. The conference sucks relative to its historical standards. You're going to play some shitty teams in February. Boston College, not very good. Georgia Tech, not that good. Notre Dame has a – like, our roster is better than all these teams. Notre Dame's got a good coach. They've got a bad roster. Syracuse is not very good this year. You're playing a couple of these teams twice. What do you project our ACC record to be? Do you think we're going to get a couple of these?
How many games total will it be?
Like, we got 12 left. 20 games total will be our final ACC. We play 20.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say maybe, oh gosh, 3-17.
That's really?
That's my projection.
I think we're going to get more than that. Like, I think we're going to have I think we have one last gasp in us where, like, we have in the middle of the month, we have a stretch where we play Georgia Tech at home, Boston College and Pitt away, and then Notre Dame at home. I can see us winning like 3 out of 4 there, and then maybe beating BC when we play them again, or maybe beating Syracuse at home. I think we're going to be like 5-15 or 6-14. And there are going to be people out there that will try to sell us that this is good enough and it's a sign of progress and he's doing it with a young roster and some injuries, and I'm going to lose it because I just don't believe that whatsoever. I mean, it's late January now. We know who this team is. They've got some offensive pieces. They play hard for most of the time. They do some good things offensively. They just don't defend nearly well enough to beat anybody of substance. Like, when they got the game down to 3 and 5 points in the second half against Duke, there was never a point where I was like, we're going to win this game. Because right. You knew that they weren't going to get the defensive stops. You knew they couldn't string together the defensive stops. We had nobody who was guarding Tyrese Proctor. We don't know how to defend a standard high pick and roll ever. We don't know when to double and when not to double. We just, it's basic defensive shit. Like we're never in a defensive stance. We have guys who don't know how to.
That's the worst part. You're right. We're never in a defensive stance.
We have guys who just don't know, like open their hips. I mean, you played at the high school level. I mean, look, you were not a guy who loved defense. If I remember correctly, back in the day, I feel like your basic defensive principles were still better than what we see from this team of a high level Division I players on a game to game basis, and it never changes. It never gets any better. So, like, they'll beat some teams, I think, because the conference isn't good, and because we play hard and we play well on offense, and we'll run into some teams that just can't score on a given night. But we're not going to beat anybody good because we just don't defend at all.
Yeah, I mean, watching the defensive end, it just, like, if you want an indictment on, like, hey, we need to make a change here, like, I mean, like we talked about, offensively, I mean, we got guys, like, I mean, Sky Clark, he can get to the hoop kind of when he wants to, not every single time, but, I mean, he's got some shake in him. Brandon Huntley-Hatfield is really coming along with his low post game, so that's good to see. I mean, Trey White, you know, I hate that his, like, signature move is, like, a jumper from right inside the three-point line, but, you know, you could at least see something offensively there from him. Mike James seems to do it against maybe competition that's, like, you know, not the best, but he's shot the ball well as of late, and he seems to give pretty good effort. But like you said, I mean, if you can't stop anyone, all that doesn't matter. I mean, we're not in defensive stance. We don't see the ball. We don't rotate. We don't know how to guard a high ball screen. We don't communicate on screens. Our post defense is very left to be desired. We don't box out. So I don't know. It's kind of
besides
just
that
basic basketball principles aren't happening on that end of the floor.
We're 250th on KenPom in adjusted defensive efficiency. In every major defensive metric, we are 250th or worse. I think our points per possession allowed is worse than it was this time a year ago, which is incredible because we were the worst defensive team in the history of Power Conference basketball last year. So while the offense has taken steps forward, and don't get it twisted, like, we're not a good offensive team.
Yeah.
We're way better on offense than we are on defense. We're still nowhere near where we need to be from a, like, overall perspective. But defensively, we haven't gotten much better, if we've gotten better at all. So it's the biggest indictment on the Kenny Payne era so far, I think, that we can be this bad defensively 2 years in a row with basically a totally different team. And it's another gigantic red flag saying that there's no reason to give this guy a year three. Speaking of that, do you see DePaul, which was 3-15, they had lost, after beating us, they lost 5 of 6 games in the Big East by 25 points or more. We were one of 3 teams that they had defeated. They fired Tony Stubblefield in the middle of the year. It was very much a, like, if they can do it, what are we doing? Like they're worse than we are, and they somehow beat us, and they're still getting rid of their head coach. DePaul is, by the way, 280 on KenPom. They have just been waxed by everybody in the Big East. Their only win since beating us was a home win over Chicago State, who's maybe the worst program in all of Division I. It reminded me of the meme of the guy who's like, Jesus, I've seen what you've done for other people, and yeah, I want that for me. It's how you felt. But it was seeing DePaul make that move, it was like, yeah, I wish we had what they had.
Yeah, good for DePaul. I mean, at this point, it really is. It's just a waiting game till the end of the year. I mean, we thought it was going to happen right after the Kentucky game. We thought maybe a game before that it might happen, and the fact that it hasn't, I mean, if you want to call that a red flag that maybe they're leaning towards a year three, I honestly don't have an answer for that. I mean, so at this point, I think as fans, it's a tough pill to swallow, obviously, but I think we just kind of have to ride this out, because at this point, I would be shocked if, you know, we're kind of this far along in the season that if anything happens now, I do think we'd wait till the end of the year if something were to happen. But at this point, you know, I have no idea what they're thinking after not doing anything from a
changing the staff last year to kind of just running things back. So who knows?
Let me say this. I was having this thought the other day because, yeah, I think it's very easy to get into this, stay in this woe is me mentality with like all of Louisville sports because men's basketball is bringing us so far down. I actually think that when we look back 12 months or 11 months from now, we're going to say 2024 has been a pretty fun year.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, football obviously has a lot of momentum right now. We've got the schedule this week. When we get to spring ball coming up in a couple of months, there's going to be a heightened interest there because you've got so many newcomers and people are going to want to know, like, how does Tyler Shuck look? How does Pierce Clarkson look? What's the quarterback battle looking like? How are all these new weapons coming together? Like, there'll be a lot of interest in spring ball. Women's basketball, if they're a top 25 team, a top 20 team again. They're fighting for an ACC championship. They very easily could go to the second week of the tournament for a seventh straight year. That'll be fun to follow. I fully expect Dan McDonald and the baseball team to overachieve. Like, I don't think that he's going to have – he never has two terrible years in a row. I think that they're going to – they may not be College World Series good yet, but they're going to bounce back and give us a fun spring to follow. And then all summer, it's going to be very cool seeing the football team talked about in terms of preseason top 25 and ACC championship contenders again. Can they get into the playoff? Are they a playoff dark horse? Like, that'll be a lot of fun. I'd be shocked if we don't wind up hiring a new men's basketball coach in mid-March, late March, whenever that's going to happen. And whoever it is, it doesn't really matter. It's going to be fun for us to get on board with him. I think that they're probably going to be more visible and more vocal. You'll have Josh Hurd go to them and talk about how Kenny Payne mishandled things with the fan base and the public. And you'll probably hear that person go on a lot of radio shows, do a lot of public appearances, try to really galvanize this fan base and get people excited. And then throughout the summer, throughout the spring, you'll have the basketball team going after players in the transfer portal, going after players in traditional recruiting, trying to assemble a roster that can compete right away. That's going to be a lot of fun. The football season should be fun. Volleyball, you know, their three best players from this past year's team, they're all coming back. The core of that squad's coming back. They should make another run at a national title. The other fall sports have been shaping up to be really good. I think it's going to be a very fun we've got the battle for Atlantis next November. Women's team should be great again. I think it's going to be a very fun year. The next 6 weeks, the next 7 weeks are just going to kind of suck. We just have to get through this. We just have to push through this. We just have to sit in this shit for a little bit and just sit there. I know everybody wants to act. I know everybody wants to do something. It's the hardest thing in the world to just sit in a pile of shit and not move or not try to shovel the shit or get it out. We just have to do it. 6-7 weeks, it's going to suck. We can do anything for 6 or 7 weeks. Let's get through this. And then I think we have a lot of fun things in store for the last 9 months of the year. Does that sound about right?
No, you hit the nail on the head, and all those things are great. The tough part about it is it feels like we've sat in the shit for, you know, longer than a year. Like we've been patiently sitting in this shit, and I think we're ready to shower up here and move on. But
we're Andy Dufresne if he got lost in that tunnel for a little bit.
That's a good analysis.
He took a couple of wrong turns.
Yeah. But no, I mean, like, I think it just the mood around right now, I think it just speaks. And it, like you said, great things going on with women basketball. A lot to look forward to in the summer. But I mean, geez, men's basketball really, like, in Louisville, it's the thread that kind of keeps everyone together. And when that's going bad, it just kind of puts everyone in a dark place. So, you know, God, knocking on wood here, 6 to 7 more weeks. And then, you know, hopefully we get some more clarity on how this is going to move forward.
Yeah. I mean, the basketball itself, like I said, I do think they're going to give us a few wins. I do think that there'll be some debate going back and forth about Kenny Payne. He'll probably say some more weird shit after press conferences. Like, he's very clearly fighting for his job, which I don't. It kind of surprises me, honestly, that like his answers to a lot of questions recently have been basically campaigning for a third year. Like, he got asked a question at his coach's show on Tuesday, and it was very simple. And I was very curious to hear his answer. It was like, "What would you say your coaching style is?" And he starts off by saying, like, well, I'm very demanding. I'm like, okay, all right. Are you? Like, you know, it was my first take. But then he immediately launches into, like, talk about how he, like, this was his dream job. He wanted to be here. And he had no idea how broken it was. And all these players that just had bad character, like, weren't listening, like, wouldn't do what he said. And just, like, throwing out all the classic Kenny Payne excuses. And it's like, he's definitely campaigning for a third year, but is he having like, does he really want a third year? Like, this is a man who at every turn has told us how much he didn't want to take this job and how much he had to be talked into it and all this shit. And like, it seems like he would be very happy going back to being a well-paid number two somewhere. He's going to be a multimillionaire regardless. He's already is a multimillionaire. Like, Kenny Payne's going to be fine. And it kind of shocks me that he's this, you know, he's like, working Rick Bowes in the media to try to get the right thing said about him. Like, I'm like, why are you fighting this? Yeah. I don't think you really want this job.
Well, I mean, I guess the thing that you would were like, all right, well, you're kind of contradicting yourself because of what little activity that we've seen for how, I mean, again, a lot depends on, you know, transfer portal nowadays. That's like the big piece of how rosters get made. So, I mean, I think we've learned our lesson the first couple of years. Like, we can't really depend on Kenny when it comes to the transfer portal. Like, yeah, he got Sky White, or, you know, Sky Clark and Trey White. They've been, I mean, you know, they've been okay. Nothing special. But the fact that there's been so little activity from a recruiting standpoint, and little success, that's where everything kind of contradicts itself. It's like, are you really putting the full effort in recruiting here? Because you would think, like, we would need all hands on deck moving forward here, and there's little to no buzz surrounding our off season.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. When you talk about the hypothetical of, let's say we did get hot next month and we win, let's say we won like 7 games and we finished 8-12 in the ACC, and everyone's like, man, damn, like, it's really starting to click. We still aren't recruiting at all. Like,
yeah.
We're the only power conference team, the only team from one of the Power Six conferences that does not have a single player signed in the current 2024 recruiting class. The only one.
Is that good?
It's not great. Yeah. TJ Robinson is committed. He did not sign during the early period. We don't know what's going on there. You know, we're still technically involved with Carter Knox and some of the like lower profile guys in that class. But none of them seem to be leaning towards signing with us. It's like Kenny Payne just did a 180 on the transfer portal out of nowhere. And it's like, well, why weren't you doing this 2 years ago? It makes no sense. But like, we're not in on anybody in 2025. The Jasper Johnson, the kid who grew up in Versailles, he had us on his top 10 list yesterday, which is good. He's a 5-star player, but do you remember Dennis Johnson, the UK football player?
Yes.
He's his son. Like, he's going to go to Kentucky. We have no chance at landing this kid. It's a courtesy inclusion to be on his top 10 list. And we're really like, we're on nobody else in 2025's list. So it's not like you can't point to any off the court stuff and say, this is why things are going to continue to get better. There's no momentum whatsoever. They certainly have been recruiting like they all think they're going to get fired. And that's not exactly encouraging if you're hoping for the Kenny Payne era to keep running for a third year.
I feel bad talking about like we're just dismissing that if Kenny's not going to be here next year, but it does kind of make me think about whoever is in Kenny's seat next year. If that were to happen, I know expectations right now are very low just because how bad we've been. And like, it's like, hey, we just need something. But I feel like it's going to be a challenge with putting a roster together. I know the transfer portal is big nowadays and you can get guys out of there. I'm not saying that whoever the new guy is can't get talent, but it feels like, you know, a lot of coaches walk into at least a recruiting class to say, hey, yeah, I know I didn't recruit you, but maybe, you know, here's my vision, here's my plan, and maybe some of them stay, some of them don't. But I think it's going to be a uphill battle just to put together, you know, a largely competitive team with a lot of depth for whoever this new coach is.
I think the fan base will be willing to accept that. I think they'll be willing to accept it in the same way that they would have accepted last season if it had been just effort and you know, winning the occasional game they weren't supposed to win, and looking like they have a system that makes sense and can work better when they get better pieces in place, which is that was the expectation for year one at Kenny Payne, and it just did not work out. But they're going to want it still to be better than it's been, which is not hard to do. If first year coach comes in here next year and wins 16 games, like, they're God. That's all you have to do. And that's never been the standard at Louisville. I'll tell you what can happen. I can't do, if it's Kenny Payne coming back for a third year somehow, I can't do another year of, like, hey, they're trying media coverage.
Yeah, me neither.
I will quit everything if I have to do this again. I cannot do it. I can't do they lost by 16 to North Carolina, but it was actually good. That's okay. That's a good thing. This is Louisville, for fuck's sake. What are, like, the fact that we still are having these conversations, losing by 16 to Carolina, losing by 14 to Duke, losing at home to a not great NC State team by 6. And these are good performances now. This is fine. This is okay. They're trying. You're seeing signs of improvement. I can't do it for another year. We've done it for 3 years basically now. I cannot go it. I will quit. I will stop doing everything. I can't do it. Like, I get
that, like, announcers, like, they can't get on the air and be like, holy shit, what the hell is this? Like, but, like, someone like Reese Davis, who called our game against Duke, like, Reese was like, you know, yes, it was a 16-point game, but, you know, there was a little bit of fight shown by the Cards and blah, blah, blah. But, like, you just know as soon as Reese, like, got off the air and boarded the plane, he was like, holy shit, that was bad. Like, you know, it's one thing to, like, hear it on air, like, people saying that, but, like, I think deep down, like, I think they know, they just can't really say it from their professional standpoint.
The condescending announcers, honestly, it might be more annoying than the losses at this point, because they act like the bar is so low for us when they talk about us. Like, you, John Crispin, he's out there, he's talking about, you know, they say, I don't know why these people are complaining about this. Yum Center sounds pretty crazy to me right now. I'm like, shut the fuck up. Like, we have 8,000 people for a home game against Duke. That's not where we're supposed to be. Yeah, I mean, and Reese Davis is like, they're down by 18 right now, but look, they haven't shit their pants and curled up in the fetal position at midcourt, so you got to say that Kenny Payne's starting to get through. They would have been crying on the floor and just, you know, taking their pants off this time last year. So this is a step in the right direction. I'm like, Jesus Christ, guys. Like, you don't just have to say anything. The only person who has been honest during a game that they've called was Tim Welsh during that, well, I think it was the Arkansas State game, where he came out and he kind of tried to do the Kenny Payne, I'm defending thing at the beginning. And then at the end, by the end, he was like, this is embarrassing. He's like, they're not even trying right now. I was like, thank you, Tim Welsh, a guy who never coached defense at Providence at all. Even he was so appalled that he was like, this is a sin in the direct face of the game of basketball. More of that, please.
What would you rather have? 12 games left total, or 5 games left total, but they're all Corey Alexander?
Sign me up for Corey. Give me some Corey. I can handle it for 5 games. At this point, I just, like, shake my head in disgust when it happens. I'm like, don't make me listen to this bullshit. It's so bad. Let's play a quick game before we get to some questions from you guys. So about this time every year, college basketball writers do the thing where it's like, here's the 8 teams that can win the national title. Like, these 8, they may not be the best 8 teams in college basketball right now, but the national champion will come from this group of 8 teams. Assuming that Kenny Payne is not going to be here next year and he's going to get fired at some point in March, or if we wait till early April for the buyout to drop, give me, like, let's throw out 8 names that you think Louisville's next head coach comes from that group. Like, these aren't necessarily like your top 8 choices. You may not like some of these guys, but who are the 8 guys that you feel like, if you had to include the guy who's going to wind up getting this job, what names are you throwing out there?
Okay. I'm throwing out names, but just, you know, I'm not super excited about a lot of these names, but I'm throwing them out at ones I think are realistic. So let's start SEC. I think Musselman. I think Nate Oates. We'll throw Chris Beard in there. Okay. We'll go Mick Cronin. We'll go Jerome Tang. How many is that? Five?
That's five.
Man, this is where it starts getting a little tough. We'll go Dusty May, six. Oh, man. I just cannot see Scott Drew leaving, but we'll put him in there. I would be super excited about that. So we'll go him, seven. And then eight's got to be like a wild card. I'll go Kelvin Sampson at Houston for eight.
Oh, God. So there's a guy who texts our radio show in the third hour every day. And he's like, why are people not talking about Kelvin Sampson? And I'm like, you do every single day. I'm like, I'd kill for Kelvin Sampson. Are you kidding me?
Here's all those candidates I list, like, none of them really just like blow you away. And I know Sampson's old, but like, if we needed to hire old just to kind of get the program back to where it is, I am totally fine with that. I think it would be a home run hire for us.
I had this exact conversation yesterday because somebody was like, who would you rather have, Scott Drew or Kelvin Sampson? And I was like, damn, I'm like, it's, you can't go wrong either way. Kelvin's 68. So you're right. Like he's probably got 10 good years left in him, but I mean, the guy is winning at Houston at a ridiculously high level. And he's winning. Like he's had a couple of NBA guys, but he hasn't had the benefit of like a bunch of one and done type talents. He's just a really, really good coach who got fucked at Indiana for a totally antiquated rule. If he were an option for us, and I don't think that he is, I would jump on that opportunity. Like you said, a little bridge to the future. I think he would get things back rolling. We could have 7, 8, 9, maybe more really good seasons underneath him, and then hopefully be in a better position to land another up and coming guy or a different up and coming guy to take over the program for the foreseeable future.
I was going to say, you go ahead and name yours then.
I had the exact same first seven, and then I had Will Wade in there as the eighth.
Okay. Yeah.
Again, fair. Not personal preference, just kind of the names that are out there that I think have some legitimate buzz behind them. Bruce Pearl also, I would probably have in the mix just because he's always kind of looking around. He's shifty eyes. He's always just kind of looking for his next move, but he's got it rolling right now at Auburn. And he's getting paid a lot of money. We got him a contract extension a couple of years ago. Maybe he goes for another one. I don't know, but a name that I've talked about on the show a couple of times that I really like, and I've got no idea if he'd be a legitimate candidate, but TJ Otzelberger at Iowa State is a guy that I think you should probably be looking at a little bit. First of all, he and Jerome Tang got into it after the game the other night. And I was like, fight, fight, fight. Whoever wins gets to coach our team. Like, come over and coach our team. But he's like the one turnaround story that we all keep pointing to as far as like, hey, you can be really bad and then be good in a year now with the transfer portal was Iowa State. 4 years ago, they go 2-12. They won two games. Otzelberger gets hired. He comes in. He takes over for Steve Prohm. And they go to the Sweet 16 in year one. And he's been really good there ever since. They went back to the tournament as a sixth seed last year. They're number 12 on KenPom right now. They don't have a ton of talent, but he's like he knows what he's doing. He came from the West Coast. He was sort of a Ben Howland protege, won big South Dakota State for a few years. Didn't do great at UNLV, but nobody does great at UNLV. It's a very tough job, and he's been fantastic for 3 years at Iowa State. I like his style. I like the way that his teams play. I don't know, like. Again, like all these candidates, there are boxes that he doesn't check that would be kind of just guesses on our part. But if it came down to it, I would definitely – he's a guy that I think would not move the needle for a lot of people, but that could do a really, really good job here. But I've got – again, he's a guy that I have no idea if he's even a candidate. If he's interested, if we're interested, any of that stuff.
Yeah. But, no, that's interesting. I don't know. Like, I have fun playing this game, but at the same time, it kind of sucks to play because I don't know who's realistic and who's not. I don't know who would even entertain the job, who wouldn't. So well, I guess maybe we'll find out in 6-7 weeks, but Mick Cronin did almost beat Arizona the other day. Whatever, I'm moving on.
I think the only substance of stuff that's out there as far as like agents leaking early on that their guys interested in trying to have some preliminary conversations with Josh Hurd. It's the guys that we're mentioning. Like, those names are all out there for a reason. It's not just people just guessing at the same guys. Like, Jerome Tang, according to everybody, is not happy at Kansas State with some of the stuff that's going on there. Mick Cronin, I think, has wanted the job every time it's opened up. I don't think now is any different. Dusty May, I think, is ready for the upgrade. All of his guys that he brought back for the Final Four team, they're having one really last, like, great run now, but they're all going to leave after this year. He didn't want to be in Florida Atlantic when that happens. Eric Musselman, I do think, is interested, and he maybe is going to require less money than he would have a couple of years ago because he's having such a shitty year. And then the other names, I think there's some buzz behind them as well.
But let me ask you this. Out of all those names, who are the top two that you're like, I really don't want to do this?
I don't know if there are two that stand out above the rest as far as like guys that I'm openly against. I mean, I don't want, honestly, I'm against Chris Beard.
Yeah.
I know that a lot of the fan base does really, really want him. I think it's a little bit of a ticking time bomb situation. And I think he knows ball. Clearly, I think he's a great coach. I think he'd win games here for a period. I just worry about, you know, we've been through some catastrophic shit here that has wrecked the program and put us in this position now. And I worry about something similar happening if he gets the job. I feel like that the risk may outweigh the reward with that one. So that he's the one that I'm kind of like, I don't know. It's a pressure job. This is a big city without a big pro sports team. Louisville basically is our pro sports team. I worry about how that might go.
Gotcha.
Before we go to the question, I have to bring this up because I saw it on my like Facebook memories. This is exactly today. This is the 11-year anniversary, I guess, of the national championship team. I don't know if you remember this. They lost to Georgetown by 2. And I remember this night because, like, you know, Mary and I, we had broken up for a period of time. We'd gotten back together a few weeks earlier. And you and your wife, now wife, I think you all were married at the time.
Yeah, already. We were married for about a year.
And then our friends Chris and Ashley, who were married, and then, you know, Mary and I were back together. We all met up and we went to the 60 West, the old like the wine bar.
How could I forget?
And like we got very wine drunk, and then Mary was house sitting for somebody, and like I just remember like we were talking, and I was like, I'm still like so confident. We lost 3 games in a row, and I was like, this team's still special. I still feel good about it. And like my phone buzzes at like 1:30 a.m. and it's you, and you're like, we're still winning the fucking national championship. And I was like, I agree. We're still going to win the national championship. And we never lost the faith that year.
Yeah, no, I think maybe that was our second to last loss before Notre Dame.
It was.
And things took off from there. I wish I could make declarations like that moving forward. can't say I have the same confidence in this team, but no, that was
Mary's awesome. Like, who's texting you at 2 a.m.? I'm like, it's Dan. We're going to win the goddamn national championship.
Probably opened another vino on my back deck, but no, that was fun.
Before we take some questions from you guys, reminding you about our friends at Home Field Apparel. Visit homefieldapparel.com for the best college sports gear, including Louisville gear. They have a new line of Kentucky Athletics. If you are hate listening to the show because you're a UK fan, congrats. They've got a new line of UK stuff. It's glorious. They've got all sorts of college teams. They've got the best hoodies, the softest t-shirts, the best joggers. They've got dad hats. They got it all for you. Use our promo code CHRONICLE15 when you check out. It'll save you 15% off your first purchase. Keep up to date with all the latest releases from Home Field Apparel by following them on their social media channels and also subscribing to their newsletter. Home Field Apparel, best college sports gear. Homefieldapparel.com is the website. All right, podcast questions. UofL Sports News says, with basketball struggling in the revenue department, does the Yum Center sell out if KP agrees to wrestle a bear at halftime?
Absolutely not. It would not sell out.
You wouldn't go to the Yum Center to watch Kenny Payne wrestle a bear.
I mean, I'm not paying to see a live death.
Hopefully it's like a trained bear.
Okay. Well,
no, I'm not. This isn't like we're sacrificing Kenny Payne by forcing him to be mauled by a bear in front of the public. No, Jesus no. Christ, that took a dark turn.
I mean, when you fight a bear, I don't know. I don't think they're going to be jabbing at each other. Like, this isn't like the kangaroo from Australia that just squared up. I watched, what's the Leo movie? My God. The one where he gets mauled by a bear.
Oh, yeah. The Revenant.
The Revenant, but, is it going to sell out? I don't know. We'll see what kind of sick people we have in Louisville.
Cam says, thoughts on the women's basketball team so far? I went to the game last night with my daughter. We were supposed to go. Yeah, it was the first time she's been to a women's game. The whole family was supposed to go. My boss had he had suite tickets. He was like, hey, at the last second, do you want to go? I got home from radio and John was not feeling well, so Mary stayed home with him. And I'm like, Virginia, I'm like, I guess we'll go, but she's going to hate it. Like, she just is not into sports. She's going to start wanting other stuff. And Mary's like, just go. She's like, Virginia, you want to go? She's like, yeah, I want to go with daddy. And I'm like, okay, well, I can't say no to that. So we go to the game. We make it through the starting lineups. She has to get a cookie. We get a cookie. We come back. She's eating the cookie. She has to go to the bathroom like 5 minutes after that. About 10 minutes into the actual game, she starts talking about, very loudly, by the way, in the suite, about how much she likes Disney on Ice more than the game, and how she wishes this was Disney on Ice, and then about how she wishes she was home watching her iPad. And I'm like, Jesus. Before the first quarter's over, she's like, can we go home? I'm like, no, we can't go home. We have to make it to halftime. We walk around a little bit. She like wants to see the Yum Center, and we're like looking at the stuff, and like we're looking at other suites, and we made it to halftime. And finally I was like, okay, we can go home. But that was, it was a tough first try with that. And I was trying to think, I'm like, did you have fun? She's like, not really, Dada. She's like, I think basketball games are more for adults, and Disney on Ice is more like stuff for kids. And I was like, damn it. Horribly.
That's a hilarious answer. Yeah, I mean, dude, I hope we don't look back one day. I don't think we are, and like going to be like, oh, like we took Jeff Walls for granted, because like I think we all appreciate what he's done. You want him to get, to the mountaintop so bad, and it feels like he's like a coach that's going to get there. But yeah, it's awesome just having you're going to have a chance year in and year out.
I mean, I think this team. I don't view them as, I hate to say this because you never know what can happen, but they don't seem like realistic national title contenders. In women's basketball, it feels like this year it's one of those seasons where you've got 4, 5, 6 teams that can win the national title and then just kind of everybody else. But he's getting the most out of the talent that he's got. He's done a good job at taking 9 new players and gelling them into a cohesive unit. They're still one of the best teams in the ACC. I do think they're the only program in America that's been to 6 to 5 straight Elite Eights, and they're one of 3 programs that's been to 6 straight Sweet 16s. I would not be shocked at all if they made the Sweet 16, and then maybe if things broke their way, they could make another Elite Eight. But I don't think that they can. UConn beating them by 22 last month was sort of an eye opener. I'm not sure they can beat the UConns, the South Carolinas, the Iowas, the LSUs, the of the world. And we'll find out more about them next month because they'll play NC State and Virginia Tech and Notre Dame, and North Carolina is good, and they beat them last month. So I think that, Jeff's going to get the most out of the team. I just feel like their ceiling is a little bit lower than some of the teams we've had in the past.
Women's basketball does feel like when you get to the tournament, it's like those top-heavy teams usually are there in the end. And like you said, I mean, we've made a couple runs, but it seems like those teams that are around 1, 2, and 3 are always right there at the end.
I did not hate seeing LSU lose to South Carolina last night, by the way.
Yeah, that's like an added bonus, for the women's team. It's nice watching them go down.
I did not hate seeing all the LSU fans talk about how Haley Van Lith's just not good enough to play there. Oh, suck it, Dad. I'm not even mad at Haley. I just, her dad's annoying. Suck it, buddy. Let's see. Lost my place here. Dr. Colby says, is there any possible benefit to letting KP have a third year? What could possibly make the AD consider that? It's obviously not working, and it hasn't felt like he wants to be here for some time now. The only advantage is the monetary one, of saving money with the buyout, keeping this thing going. But besides that, no. The program's hemorrhaging money. The program's just the brand's terrible. Nobody's having fun doing this. I just don't see how, even if this team does wind up winning like 11 or 12 games, we can do this for another year. I just don't see.
Yeah, we saw, I mean, if you've been on Twitter today, I think Eric Crawford's taking notes from the sports board meeting, whatever they do up there, and the quote, and I'm going to get it wrong, but it's like, sports have, or what, men's basketball has been a tough sell, I think was the quote. So that's not the words that you want to hear if you are the head coach of that program.
I'm with you. Radio Zone Nick Coffey says, can we get some updated Hop Brown rankings? Okay. A big Hop Brown guy. I enjoy it.
Brown Hotel's always one.
But does it have to be, though? Like, everyone says that. Like, it's good. I've had it. It's in my top three. I'm not sure it's number one. I'll tell you who makes
it. The only time I had it was after a wedding where I was, like, pretty buzzed. So it definitely, that's why I'm like, ooh, number one for me.
I'll tell you who makes a great Hop Brown. The Bristol. It's more affordable than the Brown Hotels. It's very good. I love the Bristol's Hop Brown. I used to love the BBC's Hop Brown back in the day when BBC was rolling around. I would put – so. Oh, right, whatever. I'll do Brown Hotel 1. I'll do Bristol 2. I might go Village Anchor 3.
Ooh.
It's super rich, but it's very good.
Gotcha. I'll be honest. Like, the older I've gotten, there's just some foods where, like, if I eat it, like, it doesn't set me back a day. It sets me back for a week.
Same. And it's so bad.
A Hot Brown, like, you can put that on the list. Like, if I eat one of those, like, I mean, I don't even know, like, how to act for the next 3 days. Like, my food cycle's messed up. My body's not feeling like itself. Like, do I love it? Of course I love it. But can't really just put them down and move on with my day like I used to.
It's so depressing that we're at that age, but I cannot agree more. Like, there are a couple things that I'll eat, and, like, 30 seconds after I'm done, I hear the voice of the coach from Varsity Blues, where he's like, hope it was worth it. Hope it was worth it. Was it fucking worth it? Like, just, like, slamming Gatorade coolers. Like, immediately I'm like, hope it was worth it. Like, I'm like, this is, I'm going to be sick for the next 3 days. This is miserable. It was not worth it at all. But I can still handle a Hot Brown.
Yeah, no, they're delicious.
Gil Bolberg says, how many of the non-Power 5 leagues could the 2022-23 Louisville men's basketball team win a regular season conference title in?
These are such mean questions.
I mean, it can't be more than one or two. I'm not sure we could win. I mean, I'm not sure we could win any conference title. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Like, who's – the A-Sun is bad. We beat – but, I mean, we barely beat Bellarmine. They're the worst team in the A-Sun.
Yeah. What's Bellarmine's just having a train wreck of a year, aren't
they? Yeah, they're having a rough go. They've had a lot of injuries, but they've only beaten one Division I team so far this season. It's been
– oh, boy.
Yeah, they have not won a game in conference play. They're still competing. They just – a lot of injuries. It's not been good. I mean, I want to say, like, the MEAC, I guess, would be our best shot. This is such a sad conversation. I don't even like having it. It makes me feel
you
bad.
Know these answers better than I do. I you know, I don't know who the who's in the running for the 15 and the 16 seeds and for March Madness. So I couldn't even answer that.
I am thankfully, like, SB Nation's hired me to do freelance stuff for college basketball for the next, like, 3 months. And I am so desperate to write about college basketball that's not Louisville. I'm so excited to. I've been, like, the whole week I've just been, like, diving into everything. I'm like, hell yeah, I'll watch the entirety of San Francisco Gonzaga. Are you kidding me? But I think we could win the MEAC and the SWAC and the A-Sun. Those three conferences. That's my answer. Three.
Hey, that's more than I thought you were going to answer. So, here.
That's so fucking sad. I hate even saying it. Let's see. Connor says, what was the name of that chicken place on Shelbyville Road where the chicken mascot would hide behind the bushes and jump out? Rolo Polo, of
That's
course.
That's it. Yes. God, that was like the modern day, whatchamacallit, what's the Breaking Bad restaurant?
Los Pollos Hermanos.
Yeah, that's literally what it is. Los Pollos Hermanos. That's what it reminds me of.
Rolo Polo always had terrible little league teams, St. Matthews, we would just kick the shit out of Rolo Polo every year. They were always bad somehow. It should have been luck of the draw. They were just always
isn't
terrible.
There a Rolo Polo candy?
I think you're just thinking of Rolos.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that's it.
Nope. No chocolate chicken candy, unfortunately.
My bad.
Patrick Smith says, how many days until pitchers and catchers report? I am very excited about the Reds. The closer it gets, the more I'm getting pumped up.
Oh, I think February 13th. So what is that? Today's the, yeah, so we got about 18 days, I think. Very, very excited. I feel like there's some palpable buzz around the Reds for the first time in the offseason and since early 2010-ish, 12-ish. So, yeah, we are very excited. I'm already looking at road trip games I can make it to, but they got some depth. The bats should start out with some pretty good players, I would imagine, because I don't think we're going to be able to keep everybody on the roster.
We were talking on the radio a couple days ago about how, like, talking sports, especially like Louisville sports, like I do, you know, when I'm not doing the radio show, I'm doing the podcast with you or doing like stuff with the website. And it's like, you know, I talk about this stuff like 10 hours a day, every day. And so it's like, it's kind of hard when you're at like a kid's birthday party in the weekend and one of the dads comes up and they're like, so man, are they going to fire Kenny Payne? I'm like, you know,
yeah,
I do. I was like, yeah, you know, you have to kind of engage them. I feel like that's the way that other people are when I try to bring up the Reds on the radio, when I'm yeah. like, can I interest you in 35 minutes of a Brent Suter discussion? Like, you know, just like, it's like, it's the total opposite. If anybody wants to talk to me about the Reds and the Lions, cause I don't get to do it enough. I'm like, I will talk about the Reds for an hour and 15 minutes with you. Let's go get some drinks. This is going to be great. But yeah, with everything else, I'm like, with Louisville stuff, I'm just like, yeah, you know, it's,
if people saw our like Reds text thread, they would think like we like haven't left our mom's basement like in our 38 years on life. Like we're like, okay, so like top 10 prospects coming into the year, like I'm going, like I turn into the biggest geek when we start talking about that stuff. But I don't know, I love it.
It's like, you never know, you know who never got a fair shake? Daniel Ray Herrera.
Like, yeah, I mean, he just, you know, he had a nice split finger, but like, man, he just, you know, he threw too soft to come out of the bullpen.
Wes Jackson, former Trinity backup extraordinaire, says, does Dan want Kirk back for the Vikes or does he want them to draft a quarterback?
Both. I want 1 year Kirk, and then I think we need to nab a quarterback early because just it's such a good quarterback class. I don't want JJ McCarthy, but I'll be happy with Penix. I'll be happy with Jaden Daniels. I don't know. We're probably gonna have to trade up if we want that. I mean, we're not getting Williams or Drake May, I would think, but someone like Penix, I would be totally fine with.
With the 27th pick in the 2024 NFL draft, the Minnesota Vikings select Jack Plummer from the University of Louisville.
God, I mean, we did take Christian Ponder in the top top 10, so. Pretty similar style there.
I love you, Jack. I'm sorry. Yeah. Cards fan 922 says, if the Ravens win, does Nance drop a quote, and there goes the last great American dynasty as his game ending line? It would be like, I'm glad that Lamar is like Lamar is sort of the he's like the hero in this situation. Everyone's kind of rooting against the Chiefs. People don't want the 2 weeks of Taylor Swift coverage. They're kind of sick of Patrick Mahomes, and they feel like the Chiefs get every break, and they're kind of annoying. And it's not like the video that was out there that we were talking about the other night of like the guy playing the Hulk Hogan theme over Lamar Jackson highlights after playing Mahomes' wife's annoying clip where she's like screaming into the camera. Like I feel like the Ravens are kind of America's team this weekend.
Yeah, no. Here's the deal. I don't mind the Taylor coverage. I might even enjoy it a little bit.
I don't either. I really don't.
But yeah, I think you're right. America for sure is back in Baltimore here. I won't lie. Like social media, like whether it's TikTok, there is some like absolute badass Lamar edits out there for this yeah. week. Like I've been drinking them in. So.
How much do you hate that?
Shut the fuck up. I can't do this. All right. I'm cheering for the Ravens. I'm cheering for Lamar.
I swear to God, if the Lions play the Ravens in the Super Bowl, I might just surprise the house in a Lamar jersey. I'm dead serious.
I've got two. I wore the Lamar jersey for the Lamar game last weekend. I feel like I'm going to have to wear the Lamar jersey this weekend and then switch into the Lions gear afterwards.
I really do want the Ravens to win, not just for Lamar, but because if they do win and the Lions win, I want this to be excruciating for you.
I mean, he already lit us up earlier this year. I don't know if you remember October.
That was a bad one.
He threw for like 700 yards. We went to Cave Hill afterwards with the kids. I was like, this is appropriate. I'm going to my fucking funeral. This is terrible. Brad Wolf says, where was Corey Alexander on January 6th? Oh, I know he was there. there's a lot of like, when's this going to be over? Who's the pick? Mick is a trick says, what's your favorite in-game U of L men's basketball moment from this season?
It's like, there's so many. I just am racking my brain.
Zan almost making a three against.
Yeah, Duke. I was gonna say Zan diving off on the floor after getting shit on for a week. I mean, like, if we're talking realistic, like, probably the Miami game where like we scored a layup and stole the ball and hit a three.
Yeah,
like, oh, hey, yeah. Great moment.
I can't even say like the end of game sequence against UMBC where we like had the crazy like foul that didn't get called and then the loose ball dunk to win the game. I wasn't even excited when it happened because I was so pissed off at how we were playing.
Realistically, it was probably some moment in the Texas game in New York when we thought like maybe we had for a half second turned a corner. You know, that was like the game I was probably most into all year.
Yeah. Yeah. David says, what's your way too early record prediction for the 2024 football season? It's impossible to say. I mean, I'll say 9-3, just throwing a shot in the dark. Feels like a safe answer. We got the schedule this week. I don't like that we have three games against teams that get a bye week before they play us. That's kind of shitty. Miami, Stanford, and Clemson all get bye weeks before they play our game. They're either games against us. And we have to go to Clemson at the end of a 7-week stretch where we don't have a bye game. So that kind of sucks. I mean, I just feel like it'd be great to win 10 games again. And you don't know how good some of these teams in the middle of the ACC are going to be. But you know, like at Clemson, at Notre Dame, at Kentucky, those are all games that you're probably going to be an underdog going into the season. It's going to be tough to win all three of those or two of those three. So I feel like 9-3, maybe winning one fewer game in the regular season should be the expectation for next year.
Yeah.
We have a long way to go.
No, I agree. Like, take for instance this year. Like, we went through the schedule. I think I predicted us at 7-5 before the year because I hadn't seen us yet. But then, like, when we picked the games, like the week of, I think, you know, I picked us to win every game except maybe one. So, like, I think you have to be able to see the team first before you're able to really make any solid predictions.
For sure. And I mean, half the teams we play are going to have totally different rosters by the time we get out of spring practice and. If they get the portal going, it's going to be nuts. Let's see. Andrew says, do you think Richard Pitino is being discussed at all as the next coach? Would he even take the job?
I know he doesn't almost said his name. God, I thought about it for a second. I was like, but I don't think he'd come.
He's having a great year at New Mexico, but like, can you really hire a guy who got fired at Minnesota if you're Louisville? You know, it's. I love Richard personally. I think he's like an awesome guy. I think he's hilarious. I think he's got the right type of charisma and personality to lead this program. But it'd be a tough sell to – like he'd have a portion of the fan base that would love it because of his last name and then another portion that would be like, this is silly. He'd have a lot of pressure on him. And I don't even know if he would want to given the what happened with his dad here. But yeah, it'd be interesting.
I mean, if he did – like I think that would – like I really do. I think people would really, really – rally around that hire. I think that's a way to kind of get Rick back into the, you know, not coaching, but like back into the U of L fold a little bit. I think people would enjoy that. But I do think it's probably unrealistic. But yeah, I mean, good for him. I'm glad he's having success. New Mexico is like sneaky, awesome place to have success. They got a really good fan base down there.
Yeah, even when they suck, they're getting like 15,000 people at games at the Pit. Like, it's a great fan base. They've never been to a Sweet 16, which is crazy, despite all that success.
Almost in our 2011 run. When
yeah.
We Gorgie ended that real quick.
We've beaten them. That was, I think, actually 2012. We've beaten them twice in the second round. We beat them in the 97, too.
That game was, like, excruciatingly wild. I think New Mexico had a chance to win at the end and missed a shot.
In both games, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Henry says, what's our fantasy golf strategy this year? It looks like a huge swing and miss not going with Finau this week. We got to be better. This is all we've got. I did mention that, like, when the tournament started, I talked on the radio about picking Sahith Theegala and saying Finau was my second choice. He's our alternate this week. And it happened again. Tony's lighting it up, and Sahith is barely making the cut.
It's still early. I mean, Sahith really, he kind of put it together yesterday. And the South course was playing a lot harder in the North course, and I think he shot 4 under. I think if Sahith has a big day today, he's right back in it. I'm not losing faith. I think for Tony, I mean, I love Tony, don't get me wrong. Tony has a hard time keeping his putter hot for 4 straight rounds. So,
he does.
I'm still big on Sahith kind of moving up the leaderboard here.
There's some good ones in here today. We have a lot of good questions. We can't get to all of these, but BMO says, when this is over in a few weeks, I need you guys to do a greatest hits of KP's media comments. I want to hear a top 10. Not yet, though. I'm certain he will give us more gold between now and his firing. Maybe we get the top 10 stitched on a nice throw. We will have to do a best of KP recap, because there's some great quotes that I'm sure we've forgotten about. You know, the spirit children, the tight story, the Caron Davis not being in trouble. Those are all the classics, but I think there's some hidden gems in there that we have to dive back into.
Let me ask you this. This is a question for me. If we do separate from KP, let's say in March, do you think he goes right back to Kentucky's bench?
I don't know. Is there even a spot for him now? Like, somebody would have to leave.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I think he finds a good job. I would say it's possible for sure. Like, if the right sequence of events happens, I think it's more likely that he goes back to the NBA and goes back into, you know, kind of that gig that he was holding with the Knicks.
Would you hold a grudge against him if he went back to Kentucky?
No, I'd almost expect it, honestly.
Yeah, like, same here.
Yeah, there's a story about in 2015 where he's talking about how, like, you know, he's like, I'm a Wildcat. And he, like, says it again, stares at the reporter. He's like, I'm a Wildcat. Like, not, like, he never had any, I think, conflicting feelings when, like, they were playing Louisville when he was at Kentucky. I think he loves Kentucky. I really and truly do. And there was a story about him telling Rex Chapman when he was hosting him on his official visit that he needs to go to Kentucky instead of Louisville, which I was like, come on, man. Like, why does this have to come out now? But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked at all if he went there. And I wouldn't hold any grudges. I mean, I'd want to beat them even more than I already do, but I already want to beat them a ton, regardless of who's there.
Yeah, I'm same boat. If he had, like, some success and then went back, I'd be like, what the fuck? But I don't know. At this point, I'm like, hey, just, I guess, go do you, I guess.
Yeah. A lot of people are just saying, like, how terrified are you of a Kenny Payne third year? Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, it's not like I know beyond the shadow of a doubt that he's going to get fired. So there is fear. Like, the longer this goes, and the more that you kind of hear behind the scenes stuff, like, I don't think that there's a chance that he gets a third year. A realistic chance, but I'm not going to say that it's 0%. And that does terrify me a little bit as somebody who thinks that the right thing for the program is getting off this path as soon as possible.
There was, like, an article on WDRB yesterday about, like, downtown and how there's, like, you know, vacant office buildings, and my God, Louisville basketball was even taking strays in this article.
It's
such a big piece for the city. So I mean, if he were to get a third year, I mean, geez, it just, I wouldn't understand the decision making behind that.
Aaron says, I want to hear your guys' opinion on Larry Eustace's ponytail. Thank you. It's awful.
It is so bad. I mean, I took one glance. I was like, goo!
I don't know if Larry's going through some stuff. I don't know who he's trying to impress, but yeah, it's not a good look. Not a good look at all. All right. We don't have time for any more. Dan, do you have a Dan the Dumps for this week?
I really don't. I will say this.
Jesus.
I'm assistant coaching my son's basketball team. Not gonna lie, we got a squad. We are 6-0, and not just 6-0. I mean, we're running teams out of the gym. There's talk, you know, I have an agent. He's kind of been in talk with some college teams about maybe taking a step up in, you know, competition for me next year. I don't know if I want to do that, but it's been a nice year, and I'm focused on finishing out the season.
Do you think you'd win more than six games this season at Louisville?
God damn it. I don't see the players responding to me. I'll say I can, we'll go four. I'll say four.
I love putting you in that spot. Like, so the guy who's doing the radio show with me the last couple of weeks, the other day after the game on Saturday, Monday show, he was like, did it seem like Zan Payne was maybe like just like wasn't used to playing, like a little bit out of shape? Like, it seemed like he was holding his shorts a lot. He was like not conditioned. What do you think? And I'm like, you're really gonna put me in that fucking spot to talk about this? Like, are you fucking kidding me right now? Such an asshole move.
Yeah.
Reminder, please listen to rate the podcast wherever you can. Subscribe to the podcast. It's the best way to find out when new episodes are available. We do have a game tomorrow that we're going to talk about for a solid 45 seconds here. Louisville will play a Virginia team that they've already lost to by 24 points back in the beginning of the month. Virginia, however, is a terrible team away from home. Like, they're they're a bad road team. Wake Forest beat them by 20. NC State beat them by 16. They lost to Notre Dame by 22, who's maybe the worst team in the conference besides us. Memphis beat them by 23 on the road. So maybe, I don't know. What's your prediction for tomorrow at noon against the Cavaliers, Dan?
Yeah, I'm going to go loss. going to really go on a limb here. I'm going to say we're going to lose the game. Maybe we do keep it close. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I saw the same thing. I saw that, they struggle on the road a little bit, but I don't know. If I'm like, hey, are we going to steal one? You know, I don't think Tony Bennett's the guy that we really are going to steal one from. So I'll give us a loss tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, I can see us keeping this close. Certainly closer than we did in Charlottesville. They're not playing. They're not very good. Virginia isn't, relative to what they're supposed to be, what they're used to. But this is the time of the year where they do kind of hit their stride, and they'll go on a little bit of a run. They've won three in a row now. They should have probably lost at home to NC State on Wednesday, but they found a way to pull that out. I'm going to say they win. The spread's going to be like 7 or 8 points, I think. It's probably going to be a game it's like that. I feel like we're doing this now where it's like, hey, we're playing basically right at the spread every single game, and there's not a lot of reaction to that when that's the case. I'll say Virginia 69, Louisville 61, but it's, you know, we're kind of playing from behind the entire time. Again, subscribe to the podcast wherever you can. It's the best way to find out when new episodes are available. Leave us a review. We'll read it on the show. No new reviews this week. I did check to make sure. Go Lions. Do you have a prediction, Dan? Do you think that we're going to get it done? Emergency pod Sunday night if we win.
I'll have to. I'll have to eat it if that happens. But I'll say I'm going to go against you. I'm going to say it's going to be Ravens Niners Super Bowl here.
I hope you're right. I've got a bad feeling we're trending towards Chiefs, Niners, Super Bowl. I think the Lions are going to – I think clock strikes midnight. I think the Niners are going to win by probably a couple scores. I hope it's at least entertaining and exciting. And if we lose, I really hope the Ravens win. But regardless, go Cards, go Ravens, go Lions. We'll talk to you guys sometime next week, maybe Sunday night. Who knows? Go Lions.
Go Niners. Go Cards.